The following is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network.
Welcome to Life as a Life Schooler, where we talk about how to merge life with homeschooling. I'm Danielle Papagiorgio, and today we are talking to Hal and Melanie Young. Hal and Melanie are the award-winning authors of Raising Real Men, My Beloved and My Friend, How to Be Married to Your Best Friend Without Changing Spouses, and several other books. They are publishers, writers, bloggers, and popular conference speakers internationally, known for their Christ-centered focus and practical real-life stories. They are the parents of 6 real boys, 4 grown, and 2 real girls, and live in noisy, messy happiness in North Carolina. Welcome, Hal and Melanie. I'm so happy to have you here today with us.
Oh, we're glad to be here, Danielle.
Yes, and we're so excited to be with you.
Absolutely. And I really have been enjoying your book because I know, Melanie, you and I met at a recent blogger conference and I got a copy of your book. You were giving a copy of your book away, Raising Real Men, and I have just so enjoyed it. I'm like, why have I not read this sooner? Because it's just, it's so practical. Like your bio said, I mean, there's just such practical information there. And especially if you're dealing with, well, I'll just give you a little background on our family. I have 2 boys. We have 2 boys in our family. And the oldest was very much your typical oldest child. I mean, this child would sit at like 18 months for hours and just flip pages very nicely, gently in a book and read. And, you know, he's like the easiest child in the world. And then 10 years later, we had this boy that was like your typical tornado boy. And I'm like, how do I deal with this boy? I'm not used to a boy like this. My first one was totally not like this. So it's been very enlightening and encouraging to read your book.
Oh, well, you know, the Lord gave us 6 boys in a row.
Wow.
And so we had to figure it out. You know, it was figured out or drown. And we wrote Raising Real Men because we could not find anything that was both biblically based and practical. Mm. And we just felt like people needed something that wasn't a checklist. This is what you have to do.
Right.
But instead said, you know, here are some things you can do toward raising boys. You know, here are some things you can try. Here's some things that didn't work for us and did work for us. And we shared a lot of stories from our family and from our friends, too.
Mm-hmm. It sounded like you got the full range there. You know, if you got the quiet, thoughtful, compliant son, and you got the very energetic, somewhat destructive, perpetual motion kind of son. And that's, you know, that's all within the realm of, and that's perfectly within the range of normal boy behavior. So you've gotten to experience it all. Great.
Exactly. It's been interesting, but definitely helpful to know, just like you said, some practical ways of dealing with all that energy. Because when you're trying to homeschool and like he can't even sit still for more than 10 seconds, you have to find some ways to work around that. And even just, I think, doing more of what I call life schooling, the life schooling approach, letting him really explore his surroundings and be active and go outside and run around and then go on these nature walks. And then we learn about the things that we find and we discover things. And it's just such a good way for him to burn off the energy while still learning as well, not necessarily behind a desk.
Well, you know, research shows that that kind of education, particularly in the younger years, is way more effective for boys.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Just they learn better when they're using their big muscles, when they see a real life application for things that just works with the way that God made them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, well, tell us a little bit about your background then. How did you start homeschooling? And then, of course, you kind of came into this to being authors. It sounds like that was sort of an incidental thing. You couldn't find the book, so you just wrote it. But tell us a little bit more about that, about your history with homeschooling and your story.
Well, we made the decision to homeschool our kids before we had any children to inflict it on. And did we talk about it before we were married even?
Yes, we decided to homeschool before we were married.
Okay, so before we were even married.
And this is this is really odd because this was back in the 1980s when very few people were homeschooling, but it was just beginning to be a thing. People were just beginning to talk about it, and we were both instantly intrigued. We just couldn't imagine being able to give our children an education with that much liberty and freedom, that they didn't have to sit in a desk year after year. You know, where we were bored to tears in the schools and hated it. And the idea that our kids didn't have to do that for 12 years just intrigued us from the beginning. And so, you know, and we wanted to give our kids an intentionally Christian education. You know, we wanted to be able to disciple them. Of course, that was going to be a lot easier if they were with us instead of gone from us all the time.
Exactly.
But between the two, for us, it was a no-brainer. We decided to homeschool before we were married, before we had kids, because it just sounded wonderfully exciting to us.
That's great. So now it was
better, it's even better than we expected. That's the neat thing.
Yes.
Right. Well, same for us. I mean, we started talking about homeschooling. I believe it was around the time that we had our first child, and it was a little more common back then. He's 17 now. But for us, it was more a financial decision because we knew we didn't want him in the public school. That just wasn't even an option. We both had been raised in Christian homes, went to Christian schools, and we just didn't. That's what we knew, and we knew the value of a biblical education. So when looking at finances, and we were in California at the time, it was like everything's really expensive. So that was our initial motivation. But like you said, it was just way more than we had even expected. Once we actually had our children and started homeschooling, it was like this whole new world that opened up. And just the discipleship, like you're talking about, that ability to walk alongside your children every day for hours of the day, you know, it's so valuable.
Well, and it was one of the things we realized was that the reason that you begin homeschooling, oftentimes you have other reasons that you continue once you're on the inside and see those benefits. Like, you know, like you mentioned there, the realization that, hey, I have just recaptured 35, 40 hours a week of my child's life where we can walk out our Christian faith together. And that discipleship just goes on around the clock, not a matter of, okay, let's sit down and debrief. What did you hear at school today? Well, let's correct the errors, but rather to say, let's teach them the truth from the very beginning. Let's walk through life. Let's deal with crises as they occur. Let's answer doubts when they come up. I mean, it's just incredible the opportunities that it gives you.
It really does.
Right. Well, it's all woven together. Just hearing you talk about all of that, you know, the discipleship and the academics, all of these things are woven together in a very natural and organic way when you're homeschooling. Whereas I think we think of education and schooling as a very, it's kind of in this box on its own. And I think that's the problem, is too many Christians approach it that way. And so they really don't see the difference between just sending them to public school or homeschooling or Christian school. It's just, well, it's academics, and it's just, they're going to get their education one way or another. But so there's so much that is woven together with the homeschooling when it comes to just the character training. All of those things are very valuable to make the academics what they are.
That's what people don't understand, is that when your kids leave home, we've had four kids leave home so far, grown up, and when your kids leave home, all you will have is relationship. Their relationship with you and their relationship with the Lord, and that's it. And I think that a lot of people are failing to take that into account when they're planning their kids' education, to realize that really when the rubber meets the road, if the relationship's not there, all the rest of it isn't going to matter to you.
Absolutely. That's such a good point. So, homeschooling in the 80s, what was that like as far as, was it legal when you started? And I'm thinking, too, it seems like there were really kind of two schools of thought back then, as far as a lot of the new homeschoolers, as homeschooling became legal, a lot of them were using the Christian school curriculum and really kind of doing the school at home model. What did that look like for you? Did you do a lot of the school at home, or did you really kind of go more with this whole idea of life schooling, or was it sort of a thing that developed in your home?
Well, actually, we didn't start homeschooling till the 1990s.
Oh, okay.
When we actually had gotten married and had kids and they got old enough to homeschool. But during that time between when we decided and when we actually had children, we did tremendous amounts of research. In fact, I worked on a research project about homeschooling while I was in graduate school. And we read everything. And the things that influenced us the most, I think, we're very much taken with Charlotte Mason and her approach to giving kids a love for learning and a passion for learning. Mm-hmm. And learning in a very natural, gentle way. But we also loved what the classical model's emphasis on reading original source documents and going back and reading the old things, the things that have influenced our culture and influenced history. And between those, that influenced our education a lot. We've taken a Charlotte Mason approach, but with a whole lot of original source documents thrown in. And that was kind of radical at the time, because yes, when we were starting, there were many people just going with a very traditional school at home model, but that just didn't appeal to us at all, because that was one of the reasons we weren't sending our kids to school, is we didn't want them sitting in a desk all day bored to tears.
Well, it just sounded so much more exciting when you say, well, rather than give you an anthology with a page out of each of 100 different books, why don't we read the real books together? You know, why don't we read the books, read the plays, you know? And I really like Charlotte Mason's approach. I never can get them in the right order, but I mean, what was it she said, that a child needs something to love, something to do, something to think about?
Yes.
And you know, we looked at that and said, that's great, because you take them out, like you mentioned earlier, go out and look at nature, look at a plant, look at a bird, feel the weather, ask questions about it, you know, because then when you go into science and you say, oh, here's the biology behind it, they know what you're talking about. There's a context, a framework to put it into. And that all just made so much sense to us, and so much, it's not sterile, like sitting in a desk somewhere looking into a textbook.
Yes.
Right. It's very practical and real. I love Charlotte Mason as well. It's just, well, again, it's practical. It's real life. It's a lot of what I believe, and what you agree with, sounds like, is very helpful for learning, and that studies have proven that this real life learning is very effective. So let me ask you this, because I know, Melanie, you and I talked a bit about this at the conference that we were at. So the definition of life schooling, as I've come up with, is the individualized process of discovering your child's God-given gifts and talents, primarily through real-life experiences that happen within the context of your family's unique situations and missions. And we talked a bit about, with your family and the mission that you have with just helping and equipping parents. So, and you told me that your son did a lot with the ministry, and that he learned a lot of skills that actually really helped him later in life with the occupation that he chose and that sort of thing. So give us a little bit more insight how that looked in your family, this idea of the children being part of that family mission and how that applied with the homeschooling.
Well, you know, it started very long ago with us, that we just decided from the very beginning that we wanted to incorporate, we just didn't want to be apart. Hal and I decided that we would rather both of us work outside and both of us work inside than the two of us work separately. And we, when the Lord gave us children, we incorporated the children too. We just all worked together and did things together because we enjoy each other. Mm-hmm. And that moved into ministry. Hal and I served on the board of our state homeschooling organization for 14 years. Mm-hmm. And our kids were involved in that. They would work the registration table at the conference, and they would help us set up for board meetings.
You know, we take them to meetings and things. You know, if I had meetings with other nonprofit organizations, for example, I would take one of my older sons with, just to say, hey, let me introduce you to the adult world. I mean, this is how grownups get together to talk about things that concern adult issues. And so, yeah, let's you know, kind of introduce them into the everyday life of reality.
So then when we wrote Raising Real Men, which was nine years ago, and the Lord just, when we wrote it, we were just speaking in the Carolinas, and we were thinking this would just be something we put on our table. We had no idea what the Lord would do with it. But we went from thinking this was going to be a local thing to speaking nationally in a matter of months.
Oh, wow.
Yes, and so it was a shock to us. But it's interesting how this happened, because one of the early, between the time that we wrote the book and the time it launched, Hal developed stage 4 cancer. And we had gotten all of these invitations to speak all over the country. And when we talked to Hal's oncologist, he warned us.
He said, you know, we said, this is what we do. You know, we have these contracts. I mean, can I travel? And he says, well, okay, if you feel up to it, you can travel. But you've got to understand, you're going to be in chemotherapy and your immune system will be absolutely shot. So you can't stand around shaking hands and talking with people one-on-one. If you want to stand on a platform and speak, that's fine. And then you need to say goodbye and go back to your room, because it's just not healthy for you. And we were sharing this with our family when we got home, and our teenage son said, don't worry, Dad, we'll take care of the book fair. And so from the very start, the very first event, our teenagers have always run the book fair. They've always been the ones operating the table, the resource table, or the book fair exhibit hall booth. And that's just been like their project.
And our eldest son was an adult when we wrote Raising Real Men, because we were determined not to write a book till we'd been through all the stages. And but even he jumped in and, for example, taught himself how to code e-commerce sites so that he could put together a website for us that we could sell our materials on.
And he learned typesetting.
He taught himself all kinds of design principles and things in order to help us. Well, now he has a career doing software development for a ninja software craftsmanship shop. And he got that job based on what not his very elite college education, but on what he learned working for us and helping us out.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, it's carried on with the other kids.
I mean, every one of them has contributed in some way, some more in one area than another, but we've seen it. All of our adult kids have taken things, skills that they learned and developed in the context of our family's ministry, and they've taken that on to work in college or to career level work after college in all kinds of fields, and like things like graphic design, in merchandising and marketing,
video editing, all kinds of things they learned to help us they've used in life. Like one of our second son supported his tuition was covered in college, but he needed to be able to support himself. And he supported himself working for other publishers doing what he'd done for us.
That's great.
And so it's been really interesting to see how that has all worked out, that, you know, it just was our family culture for us all to be working together, but that our kids have learned so many things working for us. Typesetting, web design, merchandising, marketing,
public speaking, they do audio graphic editing, design, production, all this kind of stuff. And, you know, even just going off into college to say, hey, we've got to do a presentation, and, you know, other students are absolutely frozen with fear, and our guys are saying, oh, I know how to do that. And, you know, it's just been great to see how the things that they grew up doing at home with us naturally transferred into their own independent adult existence.
Yeah, that's been really exciting for me, especially because I grew up in a family business. And I learned so much working for my parents. You know, I learned how to do payroll, learned how to do merchandising, learned how to wait on customers and do customer service. And when we first got married, Hal was an engineer, and there wasn't much our kids could do as far as helping him. But since we've been doing this for full time for 9 years now, it's been so exciting to see what our kids have been able to do working alongside us.
That's really neat. I love hearing these real life examples from people about how it all worked out, you know, because I think so many moms have this fear that they're not doing it right, that their kids aren't getting enough. And again, it goes back to these preconceived ideas about what education is about. You know, we think it's about desks and curriculum and all of this stuff, but when you seek first God's kingdom and his righteousness, all these things are added. God called you and your family to this ministry, and focusing on your calling, focusing on those relationships that you have with your children and bringing them into this experience with you and really making them your primary focus, God just, he honors that. And so often I see that with people, that he honors that. And it's not that you neglected academics, obviously, but to not live in that place of fear where you feel like, are they getting enough? And that's what controls how you educate them. I think it's so important and so good for people to hear a real story, you know, from people that have been there.
I think parenting out of fear is generally a bad idea.
Yes.
I think it makes us make foolish decisions. Mm-hmm. But I do want to address that head on, because I worried a lot when we first started homeschooling, if my kids were going to miss something, if I was going to leave gaps. And something I have learned, we've got four adult kids now, and they're doing all different kinds of things. What I have learned is that, you know what? Every single education leaves gaps.
Right.
There's the time your child wasn't paying attention in, you know, if even if they're in school, the day they were sick and missed, you know, there's always going to be things you missed. But you know what happens if you don't know something? You look it up.
Mm-hmm. That's what Google's for.
Right. And so what we should be far more concerned about is what kind of character our kids have, how we're doing discipling them, and do they have the basic tools of learning? Can they read and write and do basic arithmetic well? Because if you can do those things and you have a love of learning, there's no end to what you can learn.
Well, I think one of the things that comes to my mind is, if you look in the scriptures to say, what does God say about school? The answer is, he doesn't say a lot about school. Mm-hmm. The scriptures say an awful lot about character, about discipleship, about walking out your faith and walking humbly with your God. And, you know, there's the assumption, God gave us a written word. There's the assumption that we learn to read it, right? the academics are important. They're part of our training for so much that you know, modern life depends on. But the fact of the matter is, the focus that you see over and over that's really pressed on us in Scripture is the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. And the discipleship is the critical thing there. And that's what, you know what, when we take on homeschooling, we're doing that academic education. But part of what we're doing there is not just preparing them for adulthood, but we're reclaiming the time and attention of our kids for ourselves. You know, that is the time that we can invest in their lives, we can invest in their spiritual development, that we can disciple them and teach them to know and to love and to follow the Lord.
You know, one thing I want to say is, I read some research recently that I thought was absolutely fascinating. Because we have this idea that everything our kids are going to need to know for college or for whatever, we're going to have to sit down and it's going to have to come out of our mouths and teach them. Now, we love academic subjects and we love intellectual life. All four of our graduates have gone to college on college scholarships and have done quite well. But I think most people would be shocked to know how little workbooks and boring, repetitive stuff we do in our home. We do very little. And the research I just recently read really backs that up. So, they did a worldwide study of adults, asking them how many books were in the home they grew up in. You know, do you think you had 10, there were 10 books in your home, or 100, or 1,000, or whatever, okay? And then they compared the literacy on exams of the different people based on how many books they had in their house. Now, this is what fascinated me. People who grew up in a home with many books, but only had an eighth grade education were as literate as someone who grew up in a home with few books that had a college education, a bachelor's degree. That just having a lot of books in your home makes up for 8 years of education.
When it comes
to literacy. And that blew me away, but it makes sense that the culture of our home, if our home values learning, and if there's a if there are things that can engage our kids' minds in our home, that impacts our kids more than what school they go to. Or how they learn that, or you know, what curriculum you use. And so I think people think the curriculum is going to be the main thing.
Right.
And we've got to get through the curriculum and we can't miss a lesson. But really, the things that are impacting our kids' learning is much, those things are much broader than that.
Wow. That's really interesting. So jumping off of that, then why don't you share with us a little bit about how did you encourage reading? And I assume you had lots of good books in your home.
Well, I tell you what, our children really didn't have much of a choice because they were the offspring of a couple of bookworms.
Yeah.
And we're sort of like somebody said, I'm not a bookworm, I'm a book dragon. You know, I would sleep on mountains of books if I could. Yeah, that's kind of our home. And so yeah. Our kids have grown up with, they know that mom and dad are reading. They see us reading. They see us, you know, celebrating when another bag of books comes in the door. And they grew up valuing books themselves. And we read to them when they're little. We shared books when they got their reading skills up for themselves. I mean, that's just... that culture of the written word is just something they've been immersed in.
Yeah, our book, well, the room I'm sitting in has
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7
double parked bookcases. So yes.
Yeah.
And that's just one room. They're all like this.
But that's great.
I think if we have a good relationship with our kids, I say that because if you have a bad relationship with your kids, they will reject everything you stand for. But if you have a good relationship with your kids, they will value what you value. Mm-hmm. And so if you want your kids to value learning, value learning. If you want your kids to value reading, value reading. And it's a big part of our house. We still read aloud as a family. We read aloud to Hal reads aloud to our younger kids who aren't that young anymore. They're preteens and teens.
They just love it.
Yeah.
But. Well, you know, here's an interesting thing, and this is really off the cuff, so I'm going to try to express it well. Think about how did Jesus disciple his disciples? It wasn't a curriculum. You know, he took them alongside of him. He went out and he ministered. He did what he was called to do as, you know, as God's son, and then he turned to the disciples and say, basically, did you see what I just did? And he would explain it to them. And then he would bring them into the ministry and give them an opportunity to do it. And, you know, he led by example with the explanation. Well, you know what? That's critical for spiritual development. But the same thing is academic. You know, if you want your children to love books and love reading, you know, you don't sit them down and say, now we're going to study literature. But rather you say, you know what? I love reading. I'm reading all the time. You notice how I'm reading? Hey, this is a book you'd really like. Let me read some to you. Then let me recommend some books you'd like. Why don't you read some books and recommend them to me? You go through that same process of example, explanation, and then bring them right into it.
But you know how that requires that you unplug. Because if you've got earbuds in your ears all the time and you're always looking at a screen, then you're not going to explain to your kids what you're doing. And you're not going to talk to them about what's going on in your life. And I think that's the real challenge for this generation. It's a challenge for me. We are so busy online, and I have to intentionally stop, unplug, focus on the people who are in front of me in real life.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, that it definitely takes some intentionality, especially when your occupation is centered around the computer.
Yes.
You know, it's very difficult. And that's where I think you have to really trust in the Lord and have faith that when you put him first and his priorities, when you line your priorities up with his, then everything falls into place so naturally, which is definitely something I've seen in my own life. I mean, I'll be working away at the computer and I just feel this pull. And it's really just the Holy Spirit saying, you need to get off this thing, get back to the real world for a bit. And it's hard sometimes. I'm in the middle of a project or I'm doing something that I'm really getting into and enjoying. But you just have to listen to that prompting and go and do what he calls you to do in your real world and with the people that you love. And it all falls into place. It's really been amazing when I've done that to watch how even under deadlines that I'm thinking, there's no way I'll get this done if I sit here all day, let alone getting up and going and being a real mom and wife. But he does. He honors that and he makes it all happen. And I think that really applies to so many things for us as homeschooling moms and wives, is just really learning how to focus on what's important, what's truly important, what the Lord would have us to focus on, and trusting that it's all going to get done. Our kids are going to get educated the way the Lord intends for them to, and we have to trust that process.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit, I'm guessing one of the most difficult times in your homeschooling journey was probably when you got cancer, Hal, but do you want to tell us more about, was that the most difficult time, or have there been other times? Share with us just how you got through some of the tough times.
Well, our church calls us the Job family, if that gives you any indication.
Oh, cool.
It's probably the roughest time started actually earlier in the year that Hal was diagnosed with cancer, when I had a very high-risk bed rest pregnancy that ended in the birth of our youngest child, and she had a heart condition and spent weeks in ICU. Mm. And, you know, it was, even when she came home, it was one of these things that she had to have medication every 8 hours, not a minute later.
Oh, wow.
And it was a constant, you know, do we get to stay home or does she go back into this dangerous heart rhythm and we have to race for the hospital before she dies?
Mm.
So there was a period of several weeks where really you lived at the hospital. You hardly set foot in the house at all.
And, you know, like any homeschool mom, I'm sitting there feeling sick on my stomach because I'm not home with teaching my children.
Right.
And particularly my oldest that was still home was preparing for 3 advanced placement exams. And he was kind of a slacker. He always tried to get away with whatever he could get away with. And I just thought, I'm losing all this time, and there's no way he's going to pass these exams. It was a really critical time because you can't put off the AP exams. They happen at the same date all across the country. And I remember when we finally got her stable and I got home, I sat my son down, and I said, okay, son, I need you to be super honest with me. Just tell me the truth. Tell me where you are. I'm going to suspend school for everybody else. We've got 3 weeks to prepare for this exam, and we'll cram and we'll do everything we can to prepare, and I'll catch them up later. And he said, Mom, I'm done. Huh. I said, son, don't lie to me. I need to know exactly where you are. I know where you were when all this started. I need to know where you are so I can catch you up. And he said, Mom, I realized I didn't know when you would get home or if you would get home before this exam. And I realized if I was going to get this credit, I had to take care of it myself. So I did.
Oh, wow.
Now, see, I realized I'm going to cry thinking about it. While I was at the hospital so worried, the Lord took me out of my son's life for those weeks so that he could do a work in my son's heart. Mm. Completely turned him around. And he was ready, and he did great on the AP exams. And so, yeah, less worry, more faith. Later that year, Hal was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. And
yeah. That was a real shock. I mean, it was something that had developed, and I didn't have any external symptoms, and we just, very thankfully, we sort of accidentally discovered it when I came down with pneumonia late in the year. Oh. And the chest x-ray showed, by the way, you not only have an infected lung, but you've got a great big tumor behind your breastbone. Oh, my.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, and so as we were sorting through that, and we were just starting the ministry, so we were going to be traveling a lot, and I'm in the middle of chemotherapy, and, you know, everything is disrupted, and everybody's stressed out because, you know, they said, well, your dad's got a 50-50 chance of surviving this. Mm. Yeah, that's kind of hard to settle down and do a structured homeschooling experience in the middle of that.
And since then, we have spent probably about 7 or 8 months out of the year on the road,
mm-hmm.
and I and 5 of our children acquired Lyme disease.
Oh, wow.
Yes, from camping and getting into ticks that evidently were exposed. Mm.
Mm-hmm. My husband had Lyme disease for years. It's not active currently, but I know it's how horrible. Difficult that can be. Yeah.
And so that's pretty much our life, is trials and tribulations. Mm-hmm. And I would not choose to go through that. Mm. But I have seen that it has made our kids more mature and more responsible. Several of our kids who are not adults yet are more responsible than many adults I know.
And I think one of the things that, you know, this ties in with the discipleship, because we're around each other 24/7, you know, we can't just keep secrets from our kids. I mean, they know when dad's got cancer, they get a regular update of what's going on with that. Mom is struggling with Lyme disease, they see the process she's going through. And we get to live out our faith. You know, we pray over our troubles. We turn them over to God, and we admit, hey, we don't know the outcome of this. We don't know what to do next. But God knows, and we're depending on God to provide, God to heal, to God to do whatever we need Him to do. And in that process, they are learning, this is how a Christian lives through difficulties.
Yes.
You know, that your faith in Jesus doesn't mean that you're going to be insulated from struggles, from need, you know, from financial difficulties or health problems. You're not going to be insulated from that, but you're going to have strength and power and provision from the God who created you.
Mm-hmm. They see that we choose to praise Him mm-hmm. in the trial. We choose to cheerfully accept whatever the Lord gives us. You know, our kids know when I speak all day and then cry myself to sleep with pain from Lyme disease. Mm-hmm. And they know that when I choose to get up the next morning and do it again, because I think it's important, and to do it cheerfully. And that just has a tremendous impact on our kids' lives. The kind of impact that they couldn't have if they weren't as wrapped up in our lives as they are.
Right. Absolutely. Well, I think so often we want to run from the trials, like you're saying, you'd never choose it. But when they see us head into them, like to just tackle it head on. I'm just thinking in particular, a lot of people, when they run into these types of trials, they think, well, we can't homeschool, we got to put the kids back in school, and you know, we've got to try to get away as much as we can from the trial. We got to try to just protect ourselves as much from it. But really, the Lord works through these things. And I know just in our own family life, with my husband struggling with his health for 18 years of our marriage, I never would have imagined at the beginning of the health struggles that it would go on for so many years. And I think I would have just, it's a good thing the Lord doesn't tell us these things, because we can't handle it, you know? I just thought, well, he'll get through it. He's going to get over this next year, you know, and it didn't happen. But looking back now, I wouldn't trade that. I'm glad that we've gone through it, because I know I would not be where I am spiritually, and I know he wouldn't either. I know our kids wouldn't be where they are spiritually if we didn't deal with that struggle all of these years and work through it.
Exactly. And you wouldn't sign up for that. You wouldn't say, mm-hmm. hey, Lord, how about a round of cancer? I think we'd learn so much if I had cancer.
It'd be great.
But when you've got that diagnosis and you sit down and you think to yourself, you know, I've always looked at Romans 8:28, and it says all things work together for good for those who love God. Does that include cancer? Hmm. Does that include maybe a cancer that's terminal? Hmm. Deep breath, and you choose, you know what? I'm going to choose to walk in faith and say, I serve a great God. And whatever he does in my life, it came through his hands with his love behind it. I know that it's going to work out, because he told me it's going to work out. And when our kids see us live that out, I mean, that's not an easy step. Mm-mm. But when we have that opportunity to live out those struggles with our children around us, where they see us, then they see the two things: that their parents aren't supermen and superwomen. They have struggles and doubts too, but faith is the victory. And they see us make that conscious choice. And they look back and say, you know what? Mom and Dad faced struggles, but they always faced it with a faith in a loving God. I can do the same thing.
Yes.
Mm. Right.
Absolutely.
It makes it more than just going to church on Sunday and hearing a sermon. It's something real that they're seeing lived out.
It makes all the difference in the world.
Right. Well, and I love your story too, Melanie, about your son and how when God took you out of the picture for those weeks, how he just blossomed. I think so often as moms, we feel like we have to control everything. We feel like it's all resting on our shoulders. It's all up to us. And it's just not. It just really isn't. I mean, the Lord is truly the teacher. He's just using us in their lives to help. And he doesn't need us. So I think it's so important to just recognize that and to watch what happens when we kind of just take a step back and let them step into adulthood and become men and our girls become women. Sometimes that requires us to just kind of step back and let them flounder maybe a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you know, that was something that we kind of realized, and I'm not sure at what point it started to sink in with us, but we realized, you know, in Scripture, you look at the Apostle Paul, he says, when I was a child, I thought and I spoke and I reasoned as a child, and then when I became a man, I put away childish things. He doesn't talk about, let's spend 8 years as teenagers, you know, and looking at Scripture, we realized, you know what, we have little children, and then maybe we should treat them as young adults when they start to leave that phase. And so we kind of made an intentional choice as our kids were getting to the middle school ages and start to show those signs of early adolescence to say, okay, from this point on, we're going to consider you as very young adults. You still got a lot of training. You still got a lot of mentoring to go. You're not ready to run out and get married here. But the fact is, we're going to start treating you as adults with some more privileges and some greater expectations, and we're going to coach you on how to do that.
Kind of apprentice adults.
Yeah.
And I like that.
And it has been so effective, and our kids have all responded to it so well to say, hey, you know what, I'm not going to treat you like a little kid. You're 14, 15 years old. We're going to expect you to start walking more like a young man or a young woman, and we're going to be coaching you and training you and discipling you to get you up to speed, so when you do leave to go to college or to start your career or whatever you're going to do next, when you do leave this home, you're ready to stand on your own feet.
And bonus, if they know you are preparing them to be adults and to leave, that you're getting them ready and you're pushing them along that path, they're not going to be straining to get away from you so much because they know it's headed to independence.
Right. That's a good point. Well, and children will rise to our expectations, too. I think so often we think so little of what they're capable of doing, but they really will rise to those expectations. And so I think that's an important point for us to remember also. So we talked a little bit about how your children were involved in ministry, how some of those gifts and talents were developed that way. Were there any other gifts that you saw in them early on that you really kind of focused in on to tailor their education around those talents and gifts that you saw?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. One, for example, I have a daughter who is extremely talented in art. And I noticed that when she was 3 and drawing things in perspective.
Oh, wow.
Spontaneously, I said, wait a minute, that's not normal.
That's neat. Yeah, sounds like my daughter.
Yeah, and we have not had a lot of extra income to spend on lessons and things like that. So what we've had to kind of be creative with it. Mm-hmm. One of the things we've done is send her for at least a week every year to spend time with her grandmother, who's an artist, and to go to art classes with her and for her grandmother to teach her techniques and work with her. Mm-hmm. Also, because we are able to buy things inexpensively as a business through some of our suppliers, I load her up on art supplies. Everything in the world, even things she didn't think about using.
That's fun.
And as a result, she's experimented in a ton of different media, and she's found some gifts that she didn't know she had. Hmm. And I just keep her loaded up with art supplies. And the amazing thing about where we are today, her grandmother showed her different art that you can go, and there are different artists doing tutorials on YouTube. Hmm. Now, I watch it really carefully to make sure that she's not straying where she doesn't need to be, and we have accountability on every device in our home. But she, like, for example, I bought her some modeling clay. She'd never sculpted anything in her life. Well, she goes online and starts watching tutorials, sculpting tutorials from experienced sculptors. She looked for people whose work she liked. And the very first thing she produces is a model of a golden eagle that looks like it could take off. It looks totally alive. And the child had never sculpted anything before.
Wow. That's awesome.
And so we just try to encourage her, give her the help and the instruction we can, and give her supplies. I've also made sure that she had art history materials, that she had lots of books with paintings from famous artists and works of famous artists, so that she can chase down all her interest. Now,
that's great.
A very different example. We have a son who was a born entrepreneur. Let me tell you, when this kid was in the stroller, he was popping out business ideas. He's like this endless fountain of business ideas. Anyhow, it's like it never ends.
It's surreal.
8 or 10 a day.
And so we just fed that. I mean, it's very natural because, you know, of the structure of our family's ministry and the business that supports it. He was just a great participant, a willing participant all along the way. And
some of our best-selling products were suggested by him.
And so, you know, as we're reading books about marketing or about business, you know, different business practices and all, we'd read them and say, oh, that's good, and we hand it to our son and say, here, you ought to read this. And so he's read a lot of the same business books, you know, right after we did.
And then when he and two of his brothers came to me when he was 13, his brothers were 15 and 17, and said, we want to buy an online business from a homeschool family we know. I said, okay. I was a little nervous about it. I thought it was going to be a lot of extra work for me. And I said, I don't have any extra time. Y'all are going to have to do that. And I said, yeah, that's what we mean to do. And so because he was the most interested in business, he took over the running of that business and ran it for like 7 or 8 years.
Wow. How old was he?
He was 13.
Wow. That's great.
And he was selling grain mills on the internet and talking to vendors and talking to customers. And
Doing great.
And now he got a scholarship to a college that has a strong entrepreneurship program. And in fact, the fellow who endowed the entrepreneurship program is one who started a big chain of grocery stores in our region. And he told the college, he said, you can't teach entrepreneurship in the classroom, so you need to have a venture lab that will fund and nurture student businesses, basically a student business incubator. And so they fund student businesses. They give them $1,000 if they can pitch an idea that the board likes to investigate it, and then $5,000 more to start the business. And they put you in touch with attorneys and accountants, whatever you need to get the business going. And our son has had two businesses fully funded. In fact, he's launched one just in the past month or two. If y'all want to go take a look at it, it's called dashfireman.com. It's skincare for manly men.
That's great. That's a good idea.
So, yeah, we just gave him opportunity.
All started when he was a young guy who had an interest in business and seemed to have an aptitude for it. And, you know, all of our kids have got different gifts, and sometimes the homeschooling itself is a gift. We've got a couple who've had some learning difficulties, and the fact we were able to come alongside them, homeschooling them, helping them deal with their struggles, helping them learn to compensate or overcome different things, that's been a blessing.
Well, in fact, this kid who's the entrepreneur had severe dyslexia and dysgraphia. To the point that he didn't learn to read till he was 11 and really couldn't write until he was 14.
Oh, wow.
And yet he's in college on a full-ride academic scholarship. And I don't think that would have been possible if it weren't for the homeschooling. And, you know, and it requires some knowledge how to get them the accommodations need on the SAT and ACT and all that stuff. But we just recently produced a book about that. It's on our site if somebody needs that. It's called Help Is On The Way.
But you know, the neat thing about that is dealing with dealing with the learning struggles, there's not the social problem.
Right.
There's not the social issue, you know, in the schools. It's like, well, you're down at the low end of the bell curve. Right. You know what? Every single one of our students is his or her own bell curve.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They are perfectly normal for who they are. And mm-hmm. we don't have to compare them with anybody. We just have to help them where they are.
Exactly.
And so this has been great. And so we have a range here, you know, of students who have learning difficulties, and we have students who are super precocious in math and reading. And, you know, we've dealt with the whole range.
Hmm. Well, that's such an encouragement. And you think how would a child like that have turned out if they had been put through the school system? Like you were saying, the social implications of that. I just think homeschooling is so amazing for really bringing out the gifts in our children and encouraging them that they're valuable in what they can do. And you don't focus on what they can't do or what they struggle in. You focus on those gifts and where God has gifted them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I love entrepreneurship because it brings in such a practical education for children in all of the different realms that they're learning about, with finances, with just the social aspect of interacting with people in the business realm. And there's just so many aspects that are so valuable for education when you allow your children to have a business and to really explore the whole entrepreneurship realm.
Absolutely. And, you know, for boys in particular, boys are very motivated by how is this going to help me in the real world?
Right.
And having a business can make that very obvious. Mm-hmm. You know, our son, who was really struggling with spelling, when he realized how tedious it was to get mom to spell nearly every word in the emails he needed to write his customers, he got serious about learning spelling. You know,
that's funny. It's true. Yeah, I mean, when they can see the practicality of the learning, it just makes it more valuable, for sure. So, as we get ready to close here in a little bit, give us some practical tips. I'm going to bring it back around to kind of where we started. Practical tips for moms of boys who are like my youngest, who are very active and trying to homeschool. What are some of the things that you learned with such boys and what works for homeschooling?
Ooh, can I say the first thing?
Sure.
Okay, here's one thing. Do not confuse schooling and education. Mm-hmm. Do not confuse schooling with learning.
Yes.
Because those young guys, even the ones who are super active or hyperactive, they're wired to learn. They love to learn. They want to learn. They're absorbing so much information. We have to adapt the process of schooling, if you will, to meet their needs and their, you know, their natural tendencies.
And so teach what you're teaching. Mm-hmm. If you know, a lot of people teach their boys to hate school because they're making them do a whole lot of writing, a whole lot of filling out worksheets when they're little. And it's a rare boy who has good small motor skills at 6 or 7. Mm-hmm. You know, writing is very difficult for them and for most boys. And so we teach boys that learning is all about the struggle of getting it down on paper when most of it could be done orally. You know, just ask them the questions out loud. Let them do a project. Let them explain to you what they've learned. And because this is really super important, boys go through an academic growth spurt in high school. Mm-hmm. And that's when their fastest learning will occur, if they try. And most boys won't try in high school because they've been taught that learning is a bore and it's horrible and they're no good at it.
Hmm. Well, you know, one of the things they run into is when they hit the early adolescence, when they get to middle school age, there's a point where their brains are kind of rewiring. They're remaking themselves into an adult configuration, and they naturally lose some of their academic chops, if you will. That rewiring there is really impacts their ability to prioritize, to concentrate, to do a lot of the things which are just administrative.
Let's face it, they get addled.
Well, yeah, their brains turn to mush. And you know what? A little girl that's been going along in school has just been a breeze and everybody is smiley and gold stars and about it. Then she gets to fifth or sixth grade and she goes into that slump. She says, oh, I'm having a bad year, but the sun will come out tomorrow. Meanwhile, your active boy, who's been struggling and struggling anyway, then he goes into a skid. And he thinks, okay, that's it. I'm done. I can't do this. Huh. And, you know, it's really important when they hit those middle school years to recognize they all go through this.
Yes.
And you've got to encourage them and say, look, you are wired up to learn. I know that the school process is difficult right now. Let's work around that with you.
Yes. Let's incorporate the things that you're passionate about. Mm-hmm. Let's do a lot of hands-on stuff. Honey, it's going to get better. Because preserving their love of learning is absolutely critical. I've seen a boy go at 14 from, I'm thinking, maybe I can teach him enough to fill out an application at McDonald's, to at 17, he's reading ancient philosophers for fun. And at 19, he's on the dean's list at college. And so that academic growth spurt in high school is just huge. Mm-hmm. So how do you teach a boy to love learning? Active learning, discussion and debate. They love to argue about things, mm-hmm. and to debate them and to get excited. Mm-hmm. Practical application. Let them know, what difference does this make in the real world?
Yeah, you got to show them. I mean, it's not just, hey, I taught you a neat trick to do with numbers, but rather to say, now, how do you use this math? You use this math to figure out the area of the carpet you're going to buy for your house, or to figure out how much pavement to put down this street, or what's the distance between these two points on the globe. You know, you show them the practical application of things, and they say, oh, this is a useful tool. It's not just a parlor trick.
Yeah.
Hmm. Right. You know, that was one of the biggest eye-openers to me in starting in on your book, the Raising Real Men book, was that period of time when they can't think anymore. I was like, wow, so that explains it, because my poor son, I mean, I'm sure you gathered from what I said at the beginning, very academic, very smart, and just went right along with homeschooling all the way, just always remembered everything. And then all of a sudden we hit this period of time when really I was worried. I'm like, I don't know what's wrong with this boy. He can't do anything. He can't remember anything.
Well, you know, our newest book, you need to get a copy of it. It's called No Longer Little.
Yes, I have that one.
Okay. Well, you need to start reading that
one. I need to read it. Okay.
Because it is focused on that time period, the time of the tweens and preteens when they are just, when their emotions are out of control, their brains are mush, and you're wondering what on earth happened to my child.
You know, the reason we wrote that was because we wrote Raising Real Men first. And then as we got to know our readers, you know, as we got to know the people that joined us on social media, the people who read our book and listened to the questions, we realized most of these moms, a lot of these moms are coming to us when their sons hit those middle school years and they're thinking, I don't know what happened to my sweet, well-tempered young boy. He can't concentrate. He can't focus. We're having struggles. He's emotional. And I feel like I've lost him. And so that's why we wrote No Longer Little, because we realized that's where so much struggle comes into the relationship between the children, boys or girls, the children and the parents. And it's really important to understand it so that you can work through that and emerge with a stronger relationship, not a broken one.
Yes.
Well, my oldest is 17 and my daughter, our only daughter is 14, but maybe I can get it right with the 7-year-old. Now I'll be ready. I'll be prepared this time. Oh, goodness.
Well, it is a struggle. It is a, mm-hmm. it's a challenging time.
Yeah.
I think it's a challenging time for all of us.
It is.
Absolutely. When we forget what it was like to be that age.
Oh, yes.
And the struggles. But definitely, definitely going to study that book in detail before the next one comes along.
Good.
It's been great talking with you guys today, and just really appreciate you coming on.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Danielle. It's been really nice talking with you as well.
Before we close, why don't you share with us where homeschoolers can go to learn more about your speaking engagements, to purchase your books, and I know you have a lot of great products for Christmas as well, and it's that time of year when we're figuring out what do we get for our kids, how do we encourage them in their interests and their giftings. So share with us a little bit about that.
Okay, I'm going to share a whole bunch of things with you.
Okay, mm-hmm. Great.
Our blog and store is at RaisingRealMen.com.
Just like the title of the book,
yes.
RaisingRealMen.com.
Mm-hmm. And you can find our gift guide for boys at RaisingRealMen.com/giftguideforboys. And that'll give you all kinds of great ideas of character building and imaginative stuff you can give your boys of all ages. Mm-hmm. We have, you can find our podcast at HalandMelanie.com/radio.
Or you can find it on iTunes.
For iHeartRadio. Mm-hmm. You can see about inviting us to speak at HalandMelanie.com. Mm-hmm. And we, our newest thing is we have a brand new subscription box service that your people are going to love because it's all about hands-on skills.
That's great.
How do you teach your kids those skills that people aren't teaching anymore? Wood carving, basketry, chainmail, wood burning, all kinds of things. It's called Craftsman Crate, and you can find it at craftsmancrate.com.
Have fun. That's awesome.
That's probably more than anybody can remember, but you can find most of that stuff from RaisingRealMen.com.
Well, great. And I definitely will put the links, too, on our show notes so that people can just click right through.
Outstanding.
Make it easy for everybody.
And we'll be speaking all over the country next year at different homeschool conferences and family events. Mm-hmm. And we love to stop at churches and homeschool groups along the way, too.
Wonderful. All right. Well, thanks again for coming on the show today and just sharing with us all of your years of wisdom that we can learn from.
Well, we love what you're doing, Danielle.
Thank you.
That's where our heart is. Let's teach people to incorporate their kids in real life.
Absolutely. And that's Life as a Life Schooler. Hope you'll join us next time.